You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Robbins. Today I'll be reading Death at the Dragon Circus, which was recently published in the anthology And Then, the Great Big Book of Awesome Adventure Tales. Death at the Dragon Circus, Part 5, in which Kurt has a type. Kurt was pretty sure that Inga was having sex with one of the clowns. She didn't stay in the caravan most nights, and when she returned in the mornings, she was happy and mussed. He thought it was Puck at first and was prepared to find out exactly how young that kid was, just in case it was going to be a problem. But then he saw Inga leaning into Riff one night after the show and figured he'd been completely on the wrong track. "Should I be the protective big brother about this?" Kurt asked one morning, as they made tea on their little camp stove. "All aggro about your virtue? Because that sounds exhausting." "Are you angry?" she asked, sounding more curious than anything. "No, you're good. It's nice to see you having fun." "You deserve it," he didn't say, though he meant it. Inga had been quietly unhappy for so long. Why shouldn't she cut loose a little? Inga busied herself about the tea, pouring it into the tin mugs they'd been issued. "And what about you, Kurt? When are you going to have some fun?" The thought was faintly startling. "I have fun." She looked sceptical. "I like having work to do," he admitted. "Being useful does it for me." "You can't aspire to more than useful?" "I don't deserve any more than that. I barely deserve this." He didn't say that either. "It doesn't help that the only person I fancy in this damned circus is the bloke who writes the paychecks. There's no way that can end well." Inga stared at him, and he made a face at her. "Oh, Kurt. Shut up. I know. The gaffer? Don't make me try and explain it." "I don't need to," she said, thoroughly amused. "You have a type." "Don't go there." "You always pick the most dangerous person in a crowd. You're hunting for an equal." "I'm not hunting for anything." Kurt took his tin mug off her and drank half of it down. "He knows who we are, by the way. He knows about the dove and the hammer." Inga stilled. "What does he want us to do for him?" It broke his heart that her reaction was the same as his. "They know we're weapons. How are they going to use us?" "He says all he needs is backup," Kurt said. "Something heavy's brewing. Something more than the giant target that the baby dragons have painted on the side of their big top. Mob shakedown, maybe?" "Right," said Inga. "Now I have a mission too." Kurt gave her a grateful look. "I didn't ask." She leaned in and kissed him once on the mouth. "You never have to ask." "So," said Brennan, when the week was up, "I asked for a dragon pen." "Yes, you did," said Kurt evenly. "And you made me a dragon caravan. Works, doesn't it?" The old trailer, past the point that humans could live in it safely, had given way like butter under a heated knife. Once Carlotta trusted Kurt, or rather, Grippo, with her tools, he was able to cut and re-weld half of the trailer into narrow metal bars. Inside, the area that had once been a kitchenette served as a sleeping cave for the babies, padded with good chewing leaves and banksia cones, which gave way under their tiny teeth with a sound like bird skulls underfoot. The open bars enabled the dragons to be seen by as many nosy onlookers as wanted to stare. It was wheeled, which allowed them to move it easily, as near or far away from the adult dragons as appropriate, and would help them transport the babies when the circus was on the move again. It had a panic cavity built into the floor, where they could hide the babies from sight in an emergency, and it was highly defensible. Thanks to Puck and a couple of his makeup artist mates, the caravan also had a mural of adorable baby dragons painted on one side, which was good because Kurt's artistic skills were not up to that level, and he was pretty sure he would never live it down if Inga knew he thought about doing that job himself. "It works," Brennan said finally. That was all the feedback Kurt was going to get from the gaffer. It would do. He'd had a solid back pat from the grip that morning, from which he was still recovering. In the open space above the original dragon pen, Finn and Puck were rehearsing a new trick. Finn threw herself backwards off Blue, hanging with her ankles locked around the dragon's tail. Kurt clenched his fists as the girl arched her spine and placed both hands on Puck's shoulders, only to let go of Blue altogether and flip herself into a mid-air somersault that positioned her squarely on Bronze's back. "She's been doing that trick since she was 12," said Brennan. "I wasn't worried," Kurt lied. Then, plaintively, "She's a baby." "There are no children under the big top, Frostad. They're artists, or crew, or carnies." Kurt knew that. He wasn't an idiot. What he was, he realized now, was far too invested in this fucking circus. It was going to break him, one way or another. Inga's investigation had revealed a nasty history of gambling debts, run up by the circus's former owner, who had been killed in an accident 2 months ago. The reason the circus hadn't moved on from Candle yet was because they were still making regular payments to several mob bosses who owned the debts. One boss in particular, a woman known as Nadina, had been buying up the debts from the others. Her demands were ratcheting up, piling on the pressure, and until recently, she'd been asked after Brennan to give her one of the circus's dragons to pay their debt. Now, of course, she wanted the babies. Kurt was trying to think of a tactful way to let Brennan know how much he had discovered without getting his ass fired, when a voice interrupted the stillness of the morning. "Gaffer!" It was Cato, his feathered costume scorched and trailing the scent of smoke behind him. The dragons reacted to the smell, huffing their own smoke in response. Finn and Puck wrestled Blue and Bronze back into the pen. "The big top's on fire!" Brennan lurched after Cato, but Kurt hauled him back, a hand on his shoulder, ready to duck if the other man punched him. "It's a distraction," he hissed. "Of course it's a distraction," Brennan shot back. "Stay with the dragons." Kurt had been about to suggest the opposite, that Brennan stay here to protect the babies, but the gaffer had a point. Only one of them would be effective in rallying the circus folk to prevent the fire from spreading, and it wasn't Kurt. "Watch your back," he ordered, and let his boss go. "What do we do?" Finn asked. Kurt looked up to see that Puck was on the verge of dashing after the gaffer, but by a miracle was waiting to see what he thought. "I need you both here," he insisted. "The best weapons we have to protect the babies are the adult dragons, and I can't handle them without you." Puck nodded reluctantly. Finn glowed as if he had given her some kind of medal. Kurt and Puck pushed the baby dragon trailer up against the side of the adult dragon pen, which got the adults riled up something fierce. That wasn't necessarily a bad thing right now. Kurt looked around for extra weapons. He found a couple of large tent hammers discarded nearby and grinned ruefully as he weighed them in his hand. "What's so funny?" Puck asked him. "Private joke," said Kurt. "The dove and the hammer, you'll never see them coming till they smash you in the face." Kurt hopped up on top of the roof of the dragon trailer. He'd be lying if he said he hadn't reinforced the roof so that he could do exactly this some day. He saw her sashaying in their direction from halfway across the carnival, ice blonde and perfect, every inch the Inga Frostad that his partner had created for herself. "That's not Inga," said Puck in a low voice, climbing up to the roof of the trailer with Kurt. Finn joined them, hauling Bronze with her, the adult dragon perched on one side of the roof like a gargoyle about to pounce. "Gold star to you," said Kurt, just as quietly. "She walks differently," Finn said, as if this was obvious. "Looked like being raised in a circus trained you up to see through disguises. Even excellent, flawless disguises." "Who is she?" Puck asked. "An old friend," said Kurt, which was half right. "You always pick the most dangerous person in the crowd," Inga had said of his love life, and she wasn't wrong. He knew who they were up against now, at least. "Hello, Naga," he called out, as the not Inga drew up a short distance from them. The intruder gave him an impatient look, tossing back Inga's bright white blonde hair. "Do you know how long it took me to get this shape correct to the finest detail?" "Sorry for wasting your time," said Kurt, with half a grin. "It's been a while, baby." The Naga worked the same circuit as the hammer and the dove. They all knew each other, the high-level professionals, even as they moved from city to city. The deadly killer you went up against in Nensk might easily be the partner you were assigned in Marator. You couldn't get personal about it. The Naga had worked with the hammer and the dove many times, using her shape-changing skills to play any part an employer required, from murderous sex kitten or replacement trophy wife to actual 8-foot snake monster, if the situation called for it. She was a vicious, remorseless killer. And equally ruthless, amazing, in bed. She was also losing her touch if she thought she could trick him into thinking she was his sister. "How much is this Nadina paying you?" Kurt called down. "I can make it worth your while to walk away." He didn't know which of them would win in a fight between him and the Naga, not anymore. If they did this here, one of them was likely to wind up dead. Inga's face shimmered and shifted to the more prominent nose and brow of the Naga, complete with glittery hair beads and a voluminous black jumpsuit. "You're behind the times, circus boy. This isn't any old job for me. It's my retirement plan." Kurt saw Brennan swing out from behind one of the nearby carnival displays, pointing an elderly shotgun at the Naga's back. "She is Nadina," the gaffer announced. "This one's been shaking down Candle for nearly a year now, and she thinks she can take the dragon circus." Kurt winced. Of course. Naga had always enjoyed her pets. She had a personal snake collection that was enough to make any lover think twice before rummaging in her underwear. Now she wanted his dragons. The Naga batted her eyelashes at Kurt, not even glancing at Brennan or his shotgun. "Oh, please, darling, for old time's sake, don't let the bad man shoot me," she said in a baby voice. Kurt saw her move coming, and he was too far away to stop it. "Don't," he said, and threw himself into the air, leaping like he was the fucking bird of paradise working without a trapeze. In the time it took him to slam her to the ground, the Naga had already flung a handful of sliver-thin knives behind her, straight at Brennan's chest. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can follow me on Twitter and Tumblr at TansyRR and at Sheep Might Fly. Like my page on Facebook at TansyR Roberts and sign up to my author newsletter by following the link in the show notes, which will get you a free book. See you next time for the very last episode of Death at the Dragon Circus.